You're listening to KE Cast. I'm Andre Goulet. KE Cast is a monthly podcast produced by Korea Exposé. We explore Korean society, culture, and politics and highlight critical, independent voices you won't find anywhere else. Look for KE Cast at koreaexpose.com. On this episode, freedom of conscience in the South Korean military? A conscientious objector claims the right to refuse to perform military service on the grounds of freedom of conscience, thought, and religion. And until recently, any South Korean man between the age of 18 and 35 who refused to take up arms would spend a year and a half in jail. In fact, South Korea incarcerates more conscientious objectors than all other countries in the world combined. According to Amnesty International, there are more than 230 conscientious objectors currently incarcerated in the country. But a constitutional court ruling this summer that the government must provide alternative civilian roles for those who refuse to take up arms due to religious or political reasons sends a clear message that conscientious objection to military service is a human right. Korea Exposé staff writer Jeon Choi joins me to discuss this major shift in legal rights for conscientious objectors. Hi, Jeon.
Hi, Andre.
South Korea's constitutional court brought an end to nearly 70 years of imprisoning conscientious objectors when, on June 28th of this year, it ruled that it's unconstitutional to not offer alternative service options for conscientious objectors. So how big of a deal is this? How surprising is this ruling?
Well, as you said, it took over 70 years to get to this conclusion, and it was a groundbreaking ruling, to say the least. Twice before, back in 2004 and 2011, the Constitutional Court actually ruled that Military Service Act is not unconstitutional for not recognizing the right of conscientious objection. But this was not entirely unexpected, the June ruling, because in the past few years, district courts have been increasingly ruling conscientious objectors not guilty of refusing military service. So there's been a visible gradual shift in this discourse. But there are limits to this landmark decision because the Constitutional Court determined that criminal courts have the right to imprison those who invade military service. But it also determined that depending on the circumstances of each case, a conscientious objector could be found not guilty based on the justifiable grounds proven by the law.
The first post-Japanese occupation, post-national division laws regarding a military draft were enacted in 1950, and since then, something like 20,000 men or more have been punished for refusing military service, more than 10,000 of them in just the last 20 years. The roots of conscription are completely hardwired into the foundation of South Korean society, right? So how big of a change is this on a social level?
Well, I would say that there is still quite a bit of backlash, to be fair, especially among men who have served their time in the military, because I believe that there is a lot of resentment among Korean men who have served in the military towards spending around 2 years in the military. So it's a very sensitive subject for them. But people think once the law gets revised after this June ruling and the alternative services gets introduced next year, then it would really shift the general perception towards the conscientious objectors.
So the Constitutional Court, it was a 6-3 decision, ruling that the state can no longer delay in resolving this problem. It found that Article 5 of the country's Military Service Act was unconstitutional because it doesn't offer non-military options for service. An alternative to military service does exist, but it requires 4 to 6 weeks of military training, and participants who finish it are considered reserve members of the military, meaning they'd probably have to fight in the event of a war. Why do you think that kind of diminished level of service would still be unacceptable?
Well, because these men, these conscientious objectors, they are effectively treated as a second-class citizen. So, for instance, even after serving their time in the prison for objecting the military service, they cannot work in the public service or in an educational sector within 5 years after they serve their time in the prison. But even after that, it's still difficult to get back their job. And there was even one case back in 2012 that a public institution canceled employment of one man who they later found to have rejected the military service. So it's not only the 1.5 years of imprisonment that affects these people's life, but almost their entire lifetime labeled as a criminal.
So the court has given the government and parliament until the end of 2019 to revise the law. And according to the Hankyore newspaper, 6 out of 9 justices agreed that the Military Service Act should list alternative options of service for conscientious objectors. And the ruling requires a revision to the military service law, and the list of new options has to be submitted by December 31st of next year. So it's a 15-month window from today. This is 100% going to happen, right? Or could there be like political interference to try to block the law? Like, after a court ruling, could there be a reversal of this kind of decision?
Well, realistically, I don't believe that there would be a turn back. And as the relation between the North and South Korea thawed in the past year or so, compared to the hostile kind of atmosphere during the past two conservative administrations, there has been, you know, more consideration for the conscientious objectors, because national security has always been a major reason for not accepting conscientious objectors in this country. So as there's a shift in the relations between the North and South Korea, more and more people will be more accepting of this change in law. And actually today, on October 4th, there was a public hearing regarding this particular issue. And the Ministry of National Defense suggested providing alternative service for conscientious objectors to work at the fire service or in the prison, which are both have issues with understaffs. And I believe that once the law gets revised within the next couple of years, the public opinion would shift more towards accepting conscientious objectors.
So is the sort of peace initiative that we've seen between Moon Jae-in and Kim Jong-un, is this kind of creating a bit of a peace dividend in South Korean society with an example like the conscientious objector issue?
I believe so, because in the past, whenever this issue of conscientious objectors have been raised, they would always say, oh, we have one of the heaviest borders between North and South Korea. We're still technically at war. So how could we accept people who refuse to join the military, which is mandatory for all able-bodied men? But as this hostility is dwindling, this argument has been losing its ground slowly.
Yeah, it's been 70 years that South Korean men have had to perform military service, and their responsibilities vary from infantry to Navy to Air Force. How long do they serve?
So as you've said, it differs, but all South Korean men who have passed physical and mental eligibility tests are required to spend 21 to 24 months in the military. But the current administration announced its plan recently to reduce the period to 18 months by 2020.
So yeah, so how does military service affect family life for the individual who has to enter the service?
So like the first few weeks of entering the military, there is a complete kind of cut off from the context from the outside world. Those families and friends cannot contact this person for weeks unless they write a letter to them. So that's one thing, and that really affects a lot of people, not just the people who go to the military, but their family and friends who are used to being in touch with their loved ones on a daily basis. And another thing is there is a lot of like reported violence in the military, and a lot of physical and verbal violence that is more or less tolerated within the military, and that leads to occasional kind of headlines on the news of people who commit suicide or who gets brutally abused in the military. And even though this climate has been slowly changing over the past decades, it still concerns a lot of people, and a lot of mothers, a lot of sisters, a lot of girlfriends, they resent having to send their loved ones to the military.
How does it affect relationships? Because a lot of these guys are going to be 18 or 19 years old. And I mean, you're just like cut off from your partner for a long period of time. What would that be like?
Well, I personally don't have experience with that, but I have a brother who was in the military. He didn't go as a regular like infantry soldier, but he was an officer. So he had to serve for much longer, but he had more freedom to be able to communicate or be in contact with other people. But the first 3 months, I couldn't even talk to him. I could only write to him online, but he could not even reply to me. And I later even found out that he wasn't receiving every letter that I was writing to him either. And that was one of those times where there was a big tension between North and South Korea. And I was really concerned that his safety might be at risk if anything does occur between North and South Korea. So I was really, really worried.
And how does it affect school life?
So what happens is like you get conscripted at the age of 18, but you can postpone it on like right reasons, and education is one of them. So a lot of men, what they do is they go to the university, spend a year or two, and then suspend their studies and then go into the military, and then they come back. So the problem here is when they come back, there are other male students that come back around the same time, but a lot of their female friends would be in their last semester last year, or maybe even like have already graduated. So this eventually leads to the whole conversation of men feeling resented about having to serve the military for 2 years because they think they're lagging behind their female counterparts.
In a video interview available at KoreaExpose.com, you spoke with one conscientious objector. Tell us about Kim Min.
So Kim Min is a photographer who captures moments of social conflicts, like protests against authorities and portraits of minorities and so forth. And he came over, I came across his Twitter kind of account where he had this public announcement of him objecting the military service. And what really grabbed my attention were his compelling black and white photography that he's taken over the years. And I was curious what stories he had. And when he came, he was visibly nervous because he had just announced, and he had just missed the deadline to go into the military, which means like he will soon be approached by the government for him to, I guess, go to prison, because that's what happens to conscientious objectors at the moment. But as I was speaking to him, he seemed to have been more confident with his decision because he must have thought over it for a long time. And that happened to be a day just before the constitutional court ruling back in June. So we asked him how he feels about it, and he was like, I'm nervous because it will affect the way he's treated in the next few months to a year or so. But he seemed very composed for someone who is potentially facing more than a year of prison time.
Mm-hmm. What were his reasons for refusing to serve?
So as a photographer who's interested in social issues and human rights, he wanted to make a statement by his action and also by his words on his Twitter thread by refusing to serve. And in other words, he decided to be like one of his subject matters that he have been taking photos of, people who are fighting against injustice, people who are fighting against like authorities. But he also said he doesn't identify as a pacifist. So that wasn't like, I guess, the major reason why he decided not to serve.
When he decided to be public about his decision not to serve, and when he decided to make a public declaration on Twitter, it got a lot of attention, and it must have gotten a lot of pushback and a lot of reaction. What can you tell us about how the online world reacts to people who are conscientious objectors?
So the online world, especially Twitter, because one can be easily anonymous on Twitter, he was exposed to a lot of hateful comments that you can kind of see if you scroll down from his declaration on Twitter. And so he received a fair amount of hateful comments, which seemed to have come from other men who were citing like reasons for national security, or, you know, like the very common kind of comments on like, oh, if you are a conscientious objector for refusing to serve the military, if I had served the military, do I have no conscience? These kind of comments. But there were also some support even from those who claimed to have served the military for him standing up for his beliefs.
So thousands of conscientious objectors, the reason they refuse to serve is because of pacifism, and it's because of religious beliefs. And this includes thousands of Jehovah's Witnesses in South Korea. So how do you think faith influences this kind of decision? How does faith influence the decision of a conscientious objector not to serve?
So according to one survey, 99% or more than 99% of the conscientious objectors in South Korea refuse to serve the military service in the grounds of religious beliefs. And most of these people are Jehovah's Witnesses who refuse to take arms for their religious beliefs. So faith is a major factor for a lot of South Korean conscientious objectors for making their decision.
Mm-hmm. I come from a Mennonite background. I'm not a religious person, but I grew up Mennonite. This is essentially a peace church, a pacifist church that's part of the Christian faith. So I'm always really interested in this notion of conscientious objection and just refusing to participate in war. How much space is there in Korean society for a conversation about pacifism, about peace?
Well, as we've talked earlier, because of the the political situation between South and North Korea, it's always been a little tricky because we are, even today, technically still at war with North Korea. So talking about peace and no war sounds a little, you know, it doesn't sound real in the first place for a lot of people. And every now and then, until, you know, even last year, there were threats of nuclear war, and you know, it's been always kind of back of all South Korean people's minds since they were little, because we've known that there is this like visible enemy and a heavy military border between North and South Korea. So it was really hard to really talk about peace in a realistic sense.
The issue of conscientious objection, since it's now been through the courts and will be changing in terms of the law, it's got to open up a space in the public sphere for a more widespread discussion. Do you think we're going to see a greater willingness to address peace and justice issues in South Korean society?
I think so, and I really hope so. And as we've just said, there's a growing sense of peace and reconciliation between South and North Korea. And what I briefly mentioned earlier, like the violence in the military is much less tolerated than it was in the past. So now there have been many more conversations around peace and justice in the society in the past few years, which also led to the Constitutional Court ruling back in June, I believe. And since the tensions with North Korea has always been a major point of contention regarding this specific issue, once the Korean War officially comes to an end, it may make it much easier for people to talk about peace and justice.
Jiyun Choi is a staff writer and videographer at Korea Exposé. You can find her interview with Kim Min, Conscientious Objector, Why I Refuse to Serve, at KoreaExposé.com. Jiyun, thanks for speaking with KEcast.
Thanks for having me.
That's KEcast for this month. This episode was produced by Korea Exposé. I'm on Twitter at Andre Margoulet, and follow us at Korea Exposé. Korea Exposé is an online multimedia startup featuring underreported and critical perspectives from Korea. Find new episodes of KEcast on iTunes and YouTube and at KoreaExposé.com. Music on this episode's from Creative Commons. Check back wherever you found this podcast in early November for a new episode. Until then, I'm Andre Goulet. Thanks for listening.